Hello, I'm Lieutenant Commander Mark, one fourth of the Trek Soup crew here with Trek Soup, the podcast, an audio version of our Trek Soup live streams. Thank you to everyone that viewed our recent live stream this past Wednesday on the classic TOS episode, Shore Leave. While I'm at it, I'd like to plug in there our Instagram account. You can find this on IG at Trek Soup. On there, you'll also be able to find our individual accounts if you like to follow us and see what we do outside of Trek Soup. Now, before we get rolling with the audio version of our live stream, I'd like to give you guys a little trick-or-treat, seeing as we are a little ways away, short time around from Halloween there. And for all of you guys that know, I am big into Halloween. I even have my own Halloween account at Queen's Ghouls. So I have a little treat for you here. Here are four facts from Shore Leave that you may or may have not known. Number one, normally the series closing credits feature random assortment of screen grabs from a variety of episodes. But the closing credits of Shore Leave include five scenes from the episode. Note the first is the Enterprise orbiting the Shore Leave planet. Number two is Finnegan shooting from atop Vasquez rocks. Number three is Kirk pursuing him. Number four is the Glade. And number five is the Black Knight. Now, on to fact number two. William Blackburn, a professional ice skater in real life who played the White Rabbit, got the costume from the Ice Capades for free. Isn't that a little nice right there? Number three, two Starfleet cadet uniforms made for Bruce Mars and his stunt double, Vince Dedrick, were later reused on background extras in Wolf in the Fold and The Trouble with Tribbles. Oh, that's pretty cool, right? And lastly, this one I realized right away, because this is one of my favorite characters. Some of you out there may have noticed as well, but James Doohan, Scotty, does not appear in this episode, sadly. Yeah. Can you guys imagine what Scotty's fantasy would be if he went down to the planet? I imagine it would be nothing but you know, his favorite beverage there, and probably some time with the engine. Well, that'll be wrapping it up there for me there. Hope you guys enjoy the following episode, and be on the lookout for our next episode as we discuss the classic TOS episode, The City on the Edge of Forever. The date is to be announced, so please head over to our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/TrekSoup, and our IG, @TrekSoup, to keep up to date with the latest news and to find out when our next episode will be. Thank you once again from the crew and I. We really appreciate all of your support and love, and we look forward to doing many, many more episodes with you guys, and hopefully having some more interaction in the future. All right, guys, until next time, hope you have a great day. Live long and prosper.
Hey, Trek fans and sci-fi fans of all types, I'm Vice Admiral Jim, and I'm here to welcome you to another episode of Trek Soup. We've been gone for a while. We've been away on a particularly dangerous away mission, but we made it back completely unscathed, or almost unscathed. We talk about everything Trek, especially do episode reviews, and we have another killer for you tonight. episode 15 of season one, It's Shore Leave. You know, we're back in season one when we see Smiley Spock back. Kirk protects his crew from falling for these hallucinations, but then falls for Finnegan hallucination himself. Spock tells Kirk that the crew must control their thoughts, but he brings back the tiger with his thoughts. And that tiger has a collar on. All this, and Kirk went to space for reals. We're going to break it all down for you tonight. But before we do, let's beam in our crew here, starting with Admiral Joe. Joe, how are you, sir?
Doing good. And you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, sir. I know you had a bit of a run-in with a couple of Nausicaans, but you're none the worse for wear.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You're still there. Very good. Admiral, tell us, how do you feel about Kirk, William Shatner going to space?
I really wasn't fazed by it. I just saw it as another celebrity in space. He could afford it. He could do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any feelings? Tell us any feelings you have in brief about the Shore Leave, this episode.
I liked that, but I thought it was a very fun episode. One of those episodes where it's a very quirky episode. Yeah, you see a lot of random things happening.
Indeed we do. Did you like it? Would you give it what would you give it on a 1 to 10?
I'd give it a 9. Yeah.
9.
Very, yeah, I thought it was really funny. Yeah.
Good, very good. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Commander Mark, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jim?
Doing good. So real quick, your thoughts on Shatner going to space.
I mean, I think it's great. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, you know, him being Captain Kirk and all. But, you know, everything comes with time, and he seemed to have a real good time, and it really humbled him down. And that was actually pretty good to see. So I know a lot of Trek fans out there are really excited. It was an exciting moment.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. You say all good things come in time. For William Shatner, I guess you can say it took 90 years for his good thing to come in time. But no, he's had plenty of those. Your thoughts real quick on Shore Leave.
Great episode. Definitely one of the more one of the more wacky episodes. Maybe you know, a little bit too much not too much a lot of fantasy, I should say.
For sure. Last but not least, Lieutenant Ali, how are you?
I'm doing great. How's everybody else?
Great.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you.
Jim, you have a fan of your t-shirt.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Brian says my shirt.
You can only see the top, but it's much better than that. Here, let me just do this. There you go. Yeah, it's the Star Trek Delta. Anyway, Ali, your thoughts on Shatner going to space?
I'm kind of in the middle, honestly. I understand that it's, you know, it's a big cultural thing. Like, Star Trek was a lot part of a lot of people's lives, and you know, this is a big moment for, you know, a cultural, I guess, icon of, you know, many generations. But I'm also kind of like, I personally think celebrities should stop going to space and leave it to the, I don't want to say leave it to the professionals, to that. I don't want to minimize that, like, people who work for Blue Origin, like, are professionals, like, not to diminish anything that they're contributing to space travel. But the thing I'm really looking forward more to is the Artemis mission. That's kind of what's on my radar. I don't really care about anything else.
Yeah, this is actually a very exciting time, if I can put on my NASA hat for a second, which I actually have, but I won't grab. It's a very exciting time to be a space fan. A lot of stuff has been launched. A lot of stuff has yet to be launched, and that's just in the remaining of this year. So, and again, culminating with the James Webb launch, which will be December 18th. My thoughts, I kind of agree with everything that was said. I believe it's cool for William Shatner, Captain Kirk, to be in space. He's now the oldest person ever to be in space, to break that Kármán line of 62 miles. But yeah, I can see your point, Ali. Let's try to get some more regular people up there and try to make it safer for them. I mean, every launch into space, we learn things. So it's all progress. That's how I feel. Right. Guys, what I want to do is just for everybody watching. I want to break down your areas of special of expertise. So, Joe, Admiral Joe, you are our cannon person and ships of the line expert. Mark, you are our chief of ops, and you are the behind the scenes real life person. And he's going to give us the real life lowdown on all the actors, actresses, and writers, producers, and all the episodes. And Ali is Lieutenant Ali is our social conscience, and she's there you go. All right, let's get into this now. And Joe, I'm going to go right for you. Question number one. You know, I just get this one out of the way early. Has the crew of the Enterprise discovered a planet that will be the source of many a subject matter for the entire franchise? Is this Ryza?
I would have to say no, because Ryza, on Ryza, you already have things already set up for you, all the amenities and stuff like that. That's already set up for you by the time you get there. This planet caters more to your thoughts and more to your what you're thinking at that particular moment. So it'll give you what you're imagining. On Ryza, you have things already set up for you.
So not even a less advanced Ryza, maybe before they kind of opened it up as a tourist spot?
Yeah, it could be like a precursor to an this could be like a early resort or a precursor to an early resort or the start of a planetary resort.
Gotcha, but not Ryza.
Yeah, not specifically Ryza. Yeah.
Gotcha, Mark. Do you have any background on this? Were there any thoughts, either in canon or not publicly shared, about this actually being the planet of Ryza, or is it more like just kind of like a separate, you know, pleasure planet?
Yeah, it's kind of more of like a separate pleasure planet. It's definitely it's not Ryza. You know, as Jim was saying, you know, Ryza is more built for your pleasures, whereas this one, you know, just really gives you exactly what you want, what you fantasize about. And some might say it might be a little bit too much fantasy. Some people like Gene Roddenberry, who actually didn't like the first script, the way it turned out. He said that it contained too much fantasy and it wasn't believable enough for audiences. Mm-hmm. So they're actually doing rewrites to the script as they were shooting the episode itself. This in turn caused them to delay and go over by, I believe, 6 days of production time.
Wow.
For this episode, yeah.
So eating up an already low budget. They had to spend six more days of production. Interesting. All right, Joe, I'm going to go back to you for this next one. This planet is all about fantasy. For example, of course, it's full of perfect natural scenes from Earth. And of course, the planet obviously knew their ship full of humans was orbiting. But why didn't the Enterprise's sensors pick up all this industrial activity that Spock would later pick up about halfway through the episode that's going on in the center of the planet, underground? It didn't pick it up until much later in the episode when Spock made that observation. Also, does this episode provide the inspiration for development of the holodeck, which we would see in the animated series for the first time, and then, of course, come to bear in the next generation? Your thoughts?
I think when they first arrived in orbit, in one of the scenes, you see like a little small antenna peek up. I think they might have scanned the ship and scanned the crew, and the planet might have given off, kind of penetrated their thoughts and gave them exactly what they wanted to see on sensors.
Which was a pure, lifeless planet.
Right.
Just exactly. Awaiting their enjoyment. Without
right.
Basically, the planet hid its industrial activity from the crew.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Interesting.
And they could have also set up a some type of dampening field so sensors wouldn't penetrate that far, like beneath the surface.
For sure. And we've seen many examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
What about this being a precursor for the development of?
I think this might be the start of might be some early form of the holodeck. Maybe down the line, the producers might have thought, okay, hey, maybe let's create this big room, computerized room, and it could cater to what people want. Make it what's the word I'm looking for? we could, it could be programmable to what people really want. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely, I think a place that I'd like to be, I probably even wouldn't mind like dying. I know the caretaker says no one actually dies. I wouldn't mind that as long as it didn't hurt. As long as it didn't hurt too much. And if I can come out of it like McCoy did at the end of the episode, that would be that much better. Mark, why don't you tell us everything that you got on this planet as a concept? We'll be able to dig up.
Oh, I think his is.
Mark?
Yes.
So,
can you hear me now?
Yeah. Why don't you tell us everything that you dug up on the planet just as a concept?
So, like I said, the planet itself was, it wasn't Ryza. As seen in the episode Arena, the Shirley planet is an Earth globe that was also previously seen in Miri, printed backwards with exotic colors added. The first two episodes in which the ship show orbiting right to left, the fact that it is printed backwards is evident from the reverse registry number on the nacelles.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yep.
The second instance and the and only in the teaser is Mirror Mirror. And the wind chime of the planet sound effect is unique to this episode.
Oh, yeah, those little ringing wind chimes in the background.
Yeah, whenever one of those devices would pop up, correct?
Right. I guess that was maybe a sign that someone's thoughts were being read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting ready to create the next fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Allie, did you find any comparisons to other episodes or races? Such as, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the Talosians. The cage in the first pilot was all about living in fantasy as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the big one that came to my mind was, the similarities between the way that, I guess, reality is sort of perceived on Talos versus the way that reality is perceived here, as far as I guess the constructs or the false beings and animals and stuff goes. The key difference obviously being like with the way that the Talosians can manipulate their reality, it's that it's just kind of a mirage. There's that one scene where they're trying to blast down the door. And it looks like it's still intact, but they had blasted through that door like an hour ago. But on this planet, you know, if you conjure up a knight and you get, lanced through the heart by a knight, you die. Like McCoy died.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference, which made me think why. Arguably, this would be the more dangerous planet. That I feel like this one would be the one that should be off limits instead of Talos, because that just seemed like it was very easy to get out of once you kind of realize that it's not actually real, but everything here is real and can kill you.
Interesting. Wow. Worthy of some thought. Allie, at the opening of the episode, we see Kirk and the crew clearly worn down and tired. Now, the episode before this one is one we reviewed as well. It's Balance of Terror, right? So I think we are meant to think that there's a lot of time between the two, but no time to rest. That was a very stressful time. Several crew members got killed. But Kirk, however, refuses to take shore leave. Later on in the episode, Spock gives Kirk a report on a crewman whose performance is down, and it turns out to be Kirk himself. It's the Exo's duty to report on the crew, but does this apply to the captain as well? And Joe, you can.
Definitely
as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, definitely. I mean, absolutely, it applies to the captain. You know, he's responsible for everyone's lives. If he's not at 100% or as close to 100% as he can be, that's going to, you know, affect the mission. It's going to affect morale. It's going to affect, it's going to put everybody in danger.
For sure.
And I think, I think the way that Spock went about telling Kirk that he needed to take a break was very cute. And like, you could see the friendship like already starting to form with these two. It was very adorable to me.
For sure. Agreed 100%.
Yeah. I also want to say that, you know, especially aboard ship, it's always the XO is not a blunt instrument. He's the captain's right hand. It's his job to advise the captain on anything he feel. If he's not only supposed to look after the crew, but his job is to also look after the captain and advise him on anything that he may feel may be detrimental to the crew or to his own health. So he's kind of like the captain's conscience.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think we've seen that played out on several of the franchise series.
Yeah, because you also see it with Riker and Picard.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was my thoughts exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Kind of was like a part two to that for you guys. What do you think about the overall concept of play, specifically for you, Ali? We get the question from Sulu, quote, "As advanced as you obviously are, you still need to play," close quote. And the answer, which was, in my opinion anyway, a particularly Mr. Spock type answer, actually comes from Captain Kirk. Quote, "The more complex the mind, the greater the need for simplicity of play," close quote. I agree wholeheartedly on the concept of play. Anyone who knows, you know that already. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also with you. Like, I love my weekends, so the concept of play is very much key to my survival. But seriously, though, you know, humans aren't supposed to be at work constantly. We're not supposed to be in motion constantly. You know, we need play or rest or a distraction, whatever it is from our everyday lives. You know, anything from like pure rest, like the Vulcans, to, you know,
right,
kind of one extreme to, you know, playing pick up game of baseball, you know, the other extreme, you know, exerting your energy could be the way that you relax. You know, it lets our brain be stimulated in ways other than what work can provide us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, play's just as important for adults as it is for children. You know, children learn by playing, and I think there's something about sort of not necessarily reverting to your childhood, but, you know, take a load off and sort of go back and kind of experience that again to just keep your mind kind of sharp.
Oh, yeah. I mean, therapists talk about feeding our inner child. Mm-hmm. I think as adults, we do have inner child, not to get too psychological on you, but we do have an inner child. I know.
to get psychological, I actually wanted to show off my main source for research on this episode. I have this book, The Ultimate Star Trek and Philosophy.
Perfect.
The Search for Socrates.
Mm. Share the wisdom.
I recommend to everybody. I've read a lot of these for a couple of these episodes, but the first chapter in this is a quote from this episode.
Wow.
So it's all about the concept of play and how it relates to, you know, the Star Trek universe. And there's a couple of things that I wrote down. There's a philosopher, Joseph Piper. And there's a quote from him that's mentioned in part of the chapters. Beings capable of understanding the world around them, as well as inquiring into the deeper reality that may transcend the physical world, must seek out intellectual, moral, spiritual fulfillment through forms of play that take them outside of their workaday lives, you can't get much simpler than that.
Nope. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we all need our toys, and even though we're adults, we just get more sophisticated toys. That's all, you know. Absolutely. Ali, stick with you. We know from previous episodes, okay, that Sulu's hobby is botany, which I personally do not think it was explored nearly enough in the
franchise. No way.
But in this one, we learn about another hobby of his, gun collecting. And in fact, he finds an old police special, as he calls it, in great condition for his collection, under a rock. So there was some really great character development and building in the first season, I really do think. But where does the samurai come from? I mean, Kirk and Spock are running. All of a sudden, this hatch opens in the ground. Out comes the samurai. It really seems out of place. I know Sulu is supposed to be Japanese or Japanese-American. You think he has anything to do with the samurai?
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think the real reason it's there is just because that just happened to be a costume that they had on the lot that they could sort of throw in. Mm-hmm. But I mean, going back to Sulu, I love seeing Sulu in botanist mode. I love the characterization of him just being like sort of the ultimate geek. I kind of related a lot to early Sulu, just being like a nerdy guy who just really likes his hobbies, and he has very interesting and quirky hobbies. You know, mm-hmm. gun collecting and botany are sort of
different ends,
not very different ends of the spectrum. Yeah. But I thought it was such great. I'm with you. I thought it was such great characterization and like, you know, personality development that I thought I was heartbroken that it's never mentioned again.
Yeah, the gun collecting is absolutely never mentioned again. And I believe his botany hobby is only mentioned one time.
One time, yeah, we don't hear.
Yeah, right. Joe, is it in, is it Charlie X? Was that the episode?
Yeah, Charlie X. Mm-hmm.
Right. With his pet Gertrude.
The hand, yeah.
I love Gertrude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who doesn't love Gertrude? Mark, what do you got on Sulu, George Takei?
George Takei? Well, first, I have to say that he is a wonderful man. I have met him in person.
Me too.
There we go. I believe majority of us here.
Oh, yeah. Him. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great guy. Yeah. Great guy.
Such a great guy. That was probably, oh my God, one of the best moments ever. I was at a loss for words, obviously. Mm-hmm. And all I could mutter out was, thank you. Thank you. And I think I told him I love him.
But his husband was there with him that day that he came over. So I don't know if that was.
Yeah,
that
he was a great guy, too.
Mm. Yeah, he's absolutely great guy. And he was his husband. His husband is his manager. Go ahead.
Yeah, they couldn't be more of a wonderful couple. George Takei, he was born in April 20th, 1937. He's a Japanese-American actor, best known for Hikaru Sulu on the Star Trek franchise. He debuted as Sulu in the Star Trek original series first episode, Where No Man Has Gone Before, with his character making the transition from physics department to the helm by the next episode, The Corbinite Maneuver.
Another hobby.
He appeared. Sorry?
Another hobby of Sulu, physics.
Physics, right? Yep. Mm-hmm.
This guy's like a Swiss Army knife.
Mm-hmm.
In total, he appeared in 51 of the 79 original series episodes. He later voiced Sulu in Star Trek The Animated Series and displayed his vocal talents by playing other guest characters. He then reprised the role in the first six Star Trek motion pictures in Star Trek Voyager, the third season, in the episode Flashback. Mm-hmm. His image also appeared in Star Trek Beyond in a photograph that was among Spock's possessions, bequeathed to his alternate reality counterpart, Zachary Quinto Spock. If you guys remember that scene,
yeah,
when he's handed Spock's, I don't know what it is.
Like yeah, when he was informed that Spock had passed away. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you see the picture of, you know, the Enterprise crew that we know and that we're talking about, you know, in the prime timeline.
Prime timeline.
Yeah.
Right.
Since then, he most recently played Sulu in the episode of the fan film Star Trek New Voyages.
And of course, we all know about his and his family's internship at the internment camp at the beginning of World War II.
Yeah.
That that very unfortunate chapter, one of unfortunately many in American history. But Joe, we're going to go back to you. So we begin to learn about Kirk's Academy days, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was surprised to learn that Kirk was a very serious student.
Yeah.
With Finnegan being, quote, his personal devil.
Right.
Also Ruth, his old flame. What can you tell us about Kirk's Academy days?
I think during his first year in, at the Academy, he was very green. He's very cocky. He thought he was invincible. But I think once he met Finnegan, he met his match. And maybe later on down as years went by at the Academy, he started to wisen up because, you know, if he I guess he thought to himself, if I'm ever going to be taken seriously and or ever get a command of my own someday, then I've got to wise up. I think Finnegan being a midshipman, he was looking at Finnegan as like, OK, I want to be at his level one day. So I got to really straighten up.
Yeah. Is there anything, not to my knowledge, but was there anything in canon about what happened to Finnegan later on, like after the Academy?
I looked up my research. I couldn't find anything. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't find anything on Finnegan after what happened to him after the Academy.
Yeah. Please folks, if you're watching now, or if you see this, this video later on, if you know anything, please, drop us a chat and then let us know. What happened to Finnegan? I guess it would be fitting that he didn't come to a glorious end. I don't
right. And I don't. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was gonna say I like to think that Finnegan is just like sitting at home, like eating a salad while Kirk is beating up his avatar. You know, a couple million light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Finnegan's like either he's been drummed out of Starfleet or you know he's retired or something.
Right.
Mark, I guess, what have you been able to learn about Finnegan and Ruth and the actors?
Sorry. The actors that played Finnegan and Ruth. Finnegan was played by Bruce Mars. He's born October 30th, 1935. October 23rd, excuse me. October 23rd, 1935.
Ooh, his birthday is coming up in 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoyed a short and remarkable career between 1965 and 1969. Both, but two of his appearances were in different Star Trek original series episodes. He made a total of 3 movie appearances and about a dozen television guest spots.
So wait a minute, he was in another episode of Star Trek?
Yes. He was in, let's see...
probably playing another character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was Mars was originally... Oh, no, wait. It says here that he was considered for the role of David Bailey in the Corbinite Maneuver, but Anthony Call got the part instead.
Aha.
His name was seen on a list of extras for the same episode, but his character was not seen on screen.
Mm. Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, what can you tell us about Ruth?
Ruth Shirley Boone. Was an actress who appeared as Ruth in Star Trek, the original series, Shore Leave. She filmed her episodes on Friday, October 66, and on Monday, October 24th, 1966. Boone was the star of a short-lived 1960s sitcom, My Sister Eileen, and she also had an uncredited role in the 1963 film, The Wheel Dealers, as did actor James Doohan, a.k.a. Scotty.
Yeah. All right, Finnegan and Ruth. Ali, we're going to go back to you for this one. We learned that that Kirk did, in capital letters, enjoy his fight with the ultimate defeat of his Academy rival, Finnegan. Is Kirk's conjuring / beating up of Finnegan a form of therapy for him? And how strong do we think Kirk's need to best him truly is? If this is what he needs to take a break, is like what the Captain Kirk really needs is to beat Finnegan up.
Oh, I mean, absolutely, it was therapy. I think I know when we were kind of discussing like the loose prep for this that you know you had asked me if was Finnegan really as bad as Kirk. you know, conjured him up to be. And it, I didn't even like really think about that, but it's always that, that one person that sticks in your head as doing these like larger than life, like awful things to you. You know, everybody must have that one person that they still remember, like, oh yeah, they were like really bad to me. But
I have no idea what you're talking about.
How do you not know what I'm talking about? And why would you say this on a live broadcast? We definitely talked about it. I think it could really go either way, as far as like how strongly Kirk needed to beat him. Clearly he had a big impact on Kirk, you know, enough for this to be the thing that he's been thinking about or like keeping bottled up for as long as he has, for it to manifest itself on the planet. This is kind of like the, I guess, the sort of secondary moral, I guess, if you put that in quotation marks, mm-hmm. of the episode. You know, obviously we have the concept of play and the need for rest, even among the like the most enlightened of minds, if you will. But I think the second sort of string through this episode is, you know, the things we think about are exactly what you expect them to be, in a way. You know, Finnegan has that line, you know, I'm exactly what you expect me to be. And he probably wasn't really that bad to Kirk. But the way that, you know, somebody who wants to do well and who wants to, you know, do things by the book, who was a good student, who, you know, there's a reason Kirk was the youngest captain of a starship, and that's because he worked really hard. And having somebody constantly on you, that would be magnified, you know, however many times it is. It's exactly what you expect me to be.
I don't really see
it's all in your head.
Yeah, I guess I really don't see the practical joker, the personal devil Finnegan, you know, making it, becoming the youngest Starfleet captain. I guess that probably did not happen. Probably not going to happen. But yeah, very interesting that, yeah, the second kind of theme as opposed to, yeah, we need play and relaxation. We also maybe sometimes really need in our lives to confront what has been bothering us our entire lives up to that point. Mm-hmm. And how nice would it be, I mean, for each of us to be confronted with the thing or person who has caused you such, let's say, pain, for you to be able to, you know, you physically take it out on that person. And then that's like, I mean, you know, what therapist wouldn't want you to do that? It's not real. You know, you probably come out of that better, right? So yeah. The deepness.
I mean, truly tackling your problems head on.
No, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And again, you mentioned, I'm, you know, Finnegan, what are you doing here? I'm being exactly what you expect me to be. Very deep, very deep. Joe,
mm-hmm.
You commented earlier that Spock should never have beamed down to the planet. Why'd you say that?
Spock, because Spock is second in command. So if anything happens to Kirk, it's his job to take over. I remember before they beamed down or while they were on the surface, Kirk ordered Spock to stay on the ship because transporters were being affected. So I guess in Kirk's mind, he wanted someone from his senior staff to stay on board in the event that something happened to the landing party.
Right, right. So in other words, an experienced officer needed to be on board the
Enterprise. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, and as first officer, that's his first priority. But
right.
That's what we talked about before with him managing the crew. But he does eventually beam down with what he says to be the last possible transport.
Right.
Last bit of energy that they had for the transporter. Mm-hmm. Because he couldn't communicate with the captain. Right thing or wrong thing to do at that point?
I would say that was the wrong thing to do. Yeah. Because now, okay, we're on the surface. Okay, who's running the ship?
So maybe send somebody else down with the message.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I see. Maybe the only thing I could think of is maybe it was risky and Spock didn't want to risk anybody else's life.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, but right, that might be the only escape that he gets.
Right.
For doing that. But again, Joe and Mark, get in on this one as well. We're introduced to Yeoman Tanya Barrows. But what happened to Yeoman Rand? I mean, she's supposed to be the Captain Yeoman. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in the established canon, Joe, about this? And then Mark, is there anything in real life, in the real life show history or in the history of Grace Lee Whitney, the actor, to explain this? Joe?
From the research I've done, I haven't found any like in canons, any in canon material support why she wasn't there. But I theorized that being that she was a yeoman, she wanted to expand her Starfleet career, so she might have been transferred to a starbase or another starship, just to, as any Starfleet officer want to do they wanted to move up in career. We don't see Yeoman Rand again until Star Trek The Motion Picture, when she's now Chief Petty Officer and being right. Transporter Chief.
Yep. That's very good. And later she even becomes a commission, right? And later
she eventually goes to officer candidate school and she becomes a commissioned officer. Eventually to become the communications officer and first officer, rank of commander under Captain Sulu.
Yes, fantastic. So what a rise in rank for Yeoman Rand. But Mark, Grace Lee Whitney, what have you got on her?
Grace Lee Whitney. She was an American actress and entertainer best known for her portrayal as Yeoman Janice Rand in the original series. Mm-hmm. Her character was originally intended to be a major part of the series. However, she was written out after 8 episodes. Whitney returned to the role in several cameo appearances in subsequent Star Trek movies and featured in Star Trek Voyager episode Flashback. Mm-hmm. She retained an active interest in Star Trek fandom, appearing in several fan films. Now, her character was intended to appear in far more episodes than she ultimately did. Whitney's Yeoman Rand was written out of several episodes and ultimately dropped from the series after 8. The exact reason for her dismissal is uncertain, although it is some causes are cited as being, her struggle with alcohol and use of diet pills, while creator Gene Roddenberry's biography suggests that her departure was simply a budget cutback. But he's also quoted as saying, he said it was the biggest mistake he ever made by taking her out.
Yeah, I mean, she was real good in the movies. I thought.
Yeah.
Maybe a more mature Grace Lee Whitney kind of get her act together. Sometimes it takes a little time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, one of the books I read by William Shatner, Star Trek Memories, if you guys had a chance to check that out, he writes a little bit about Grace Lee Whitney in there. He does not have complimentary things to say about her in that book. Mm-hmm. But I mean, well, William Shatner, we won't go any further than that. We're going to move on with Ali. Go ahead, Joe.
No, I said just as a little short. I wanted to actually show this. I got this picture with her just about, I think, just before she passed. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, nice.
So cool.
Yeah, I was at a Star Trek convention. I was lucky.
Guys, if you guys watching this, maybe you're going to watch it later on. Joe has met the most cast members than anybody I've ever known. he's gone to conventions. He takes pictures. I remember meeting Joe way, way back when, and he was just like, I think the next day was when he found out I was a big Star Trek fan too. I think the next day he brought in his big binder with all his pictures and all the autographs and everybody that he met. So if you ever want to know how a person, one of the actors was in real life, chances are that Joe's the guy to ask for that. So as I was trying to say about to Ali, so we have Yeoman Barrows, who conjures up Don Juan, right? Space is a big and probably lonely place, I know. So is it because she's lonely that she conjures up? She's thinking these things that she kind of says a little bit, this is all a girl would need would be someone to sweep her off her feet like Don Juan, but I mean, there are 430 shipmates on her ship, so how lonely could it actually be? I know there is a concept of feeling alone in a crowd, absolutely. Also, why so many thoughts from the crew in general about things that are centuries old? I mean, we're talking about, you know, Sulu finds the gun. It's from the, you know, the mid-20th century. Rodriguez conjures up World War II airplanes. First an American airplane, then it's a Japanese airplane, and it's American again. Then it's two Japanese airplanes strafing Kirk and Spock. So again, centuries old. Why do you think this is? I know the quick answer is because it's in the script, Jim. But what are we, the viewer, led to believe? Also, why is Kirk the only one thinking about things within his own lifetime with Finnegan and Ruth? So, to sum that up, I know it's a lot. Is it because she's lonely? She's conjuring up someone like Don Juan? Why so many thoughts centuries old? And why is Kirk the only one thinking about things in his lifetime?
Yeah, I think, you know, Ewan Barrow's thinking up Don Juan. I felt like that was kind of another case of just kind of being bored at work. I know in the when we talked about Balance of Terror, we made a point that there's a lot of Star Trek episodes that really show space being a job. You know, it's not super glamorous. Sometimes it's kind of boring. Everybody's had a boring day at work. And I think she's just sort of thinking about, oh, well, you know, I have all of these crew members, you know, these are my friends, you know, I'm not, you know, if because it's Don Juan, I'm assuming that she's thinking about something romantic. And, you know, I don't want to date my coworkers kind of situation. I don't think it's necessarily Don Juan specifically. It's kind of the idea of like a Don Juan type of character.
Right.
Therefore, thereby causing Don Juan, the actual literary character, to appear. And I think going to the next sort of portion of that, you know, why are there so many things that are centuries old? Like, it's something the audience can relate to. It's something that they can recognize and put, you know, they don't have to think about like, oh, I don't know what that is and I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about this. Like, everybody's thought about, you know, Alice in Wonderland. Everybody's thought about, you know, a Don Juan type of, you know, man or, you know,
a princess.
Being a princess, you know, right. what little girl watching Star Trek wouldn't want to find a princess dress and become a princess? Mm-hmm. I think it's easy for the audience to latch on to what's happening on screen more so than it's for good storytelling. You know, this episode, I feel like, is, I don't want to call it a filler episode because there's a lot of like smart things happening in this episode, but it's definitely a little bit wild.
Yeah, for sure. But
so I think having something that the audience can kind of be like, okay, I recognize that makes for better storytelling.
So then why Kirk not thinking or bringing up anything centuries old, but the only one to bring up things from his past? One, his personal devil, Finnegan. a negative experience from his academy days. To Ruth, a very positive experience from his academy days. So why Kirk? Is it just to offer insight into Kirk's psyche, his character, or what? I mean, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really wonderful character building for Kirk that, you know, he thinks about the bad stuff. He thinks about the good stuff. But he doesn't, you know, reaching so far into the past, you know, if the rest of the crew is thinking about things that are centuries old, you know, maybe they're history nerds and they're just having a conversation about, you know, a book they read that happened to have, you know,
yeah,
planes in it, and they just happens to appear. Like, they're not, it's not that they're necessarily dwelling in the past, but with Kirk focusing on things that are sort of within his own timeline and within his own life, I think it kind of shows that, you know, like, yes, he can dwell in the past, but it's not it's not an unattainable past. It's not considered like ancient or like fantasy type of unattainable past. He had these things happen. He realizes that they're not real. I think he says to Ruth at one point, like, how can you be here? So he has the recognition that, oh, you know, this is something that's from, you know, years and years ago. And he moves on to the next. He moves on to the next topic. You know, he doesn't really give it much thought. He doesn't necessarily dwell on things as much right. as, you know, the typical person would.
I think maybe part of what you're getting at is the other people. I mean, it's Lieutenant Rodriguez who conjures up the planes because he's obviously into history. And Yeoman Barrows, you know, feels like a princess. So the dress pops up in Don Juan and things like that. All things that are from the distant past as it relates to Star Trek. But Kirk is more maybe grounded in the future. I mean, not the future, grounded in the present. You know, these are things that made him. Ali, I mean, we have Tonya Barrows, okay, and Barrows, but in the last episode, episode 14 of season one, we have Imbalance of Terror, Angela Martine, okay. Am I crazy, or is this the same person? Is this the same actor? If it's the same actor, is it the same character? I don't know. Mark, we're going to get to you on this. I know you have the dirt on this. But, am I crazy? Am I seeing things?
Wait, are you asking both of us?
Yeah, you first.
Oh, okay. I mean, I always assumed that it was the same character. And I think, you know, very very poetic that her, you know, what happened. It's not a spoiler. The show's been out for a long time.
Don't worry about spoilers, folks.
Yeah, when she does die at the end of this episode, it's sort of poetic that this comes right after, you know, Robert Tomlinson dies in the previous episode. That, you know, who she, Angela Martine was supposed to marry. It's the same. Yeah, like I said, it's the same actress. It's, you know, practically the same character. Mark, I'm pretty sure you're going to go into some of this as well. That I had read somewhere that they had written the character's last name as Teller, and they kind of realized halfway through filming that, oh, you played this character in the episode a couple of days ago that we filmed. Do you want to, you know, make it that same character? But they never went back and changed her last name. There's some story like that that I had read. I don't know if, Mark, you had heard something similar or otherwise.
Go, Mark. What do you got?
Yeah, so it is the same actress. We discussed her before when we were talking about Balance of Terror, Barbara Valdivine, who played Angela Martine. Now, Kirk addressed her as Angela, addressed Angela as Teller in the episode. And like Ali said, you know, they were just like, let's just roll with it and hoping, you know, no one would find that. But, you know, here we are. We got you.
Yeah, I mean, the episode was already, what, six days overshoot?
Yeah.
And probably way over budget anyway. We can't go back and change the name.
Even in the closing credits, she's identified as Angela.
But Angela Teller, right?
Angela.
As Angela, right, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, there you go, folks. I mean, when you have a show that's fraught with budget overruns from a small budget to begin with. I'm going to stop talking about the budget because that's something that's going to. I think the show was fantastic and it was made one hand tied behind their backs was economically. Mark, I want to close out with you though. Okay, so you told us it's the same actress. It was supposed to be the same character. She's hanging around with Lieutenant Rodriguez. What do you got on him?
Hold on one second. Lieutenant Rodriguez.
Yeah.
He's an American. He is a New York City born Ray's actor.
Uh-huh, there you go.
Yep. Hold on once. Sorry. Apologies. Perry Lopez began his career in New York City. He ultimately broke into film and uncredited role in the classic 1954 science fiction monster movie, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is coinciding wow. as we are you know, 11 days out from Halloween today.
He, I guess Mark's favorite yeah. holiday, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Yeah, so Lieutenant, excuse me, not Lieutenant, Perry Lopez, he played Rodriguez on the episode there, and 15 years, excuse me, yep.
All right.
Yeah, that's all I got on him, sorry. I'm having a little difficulties over here.
My phone's being a little poppy there, so we're going to move on. Actually, closing statements or closing thoughts from Ali or Joe or Mark about the episode before we say goodnight.
Go ahead, Joe. No, I was going to say I thought it was a very I really liked it. I thought it was a very quirky episode. A very fun episode to watch. He's like I said before. Yeah, it was a lot of random things going on.
Oh yeah, I love this episode because it's so goofy and.
Yeah.
Out of place is the wrong phrase to use. It's really funny. It's a nice change of pace from, you know, having the most stressful episode immediately followed by probably the goofiest episode.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, very, very deadly serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. In actuality, deadly serious episode. And now you have a kind of a goofy one, but it's got a seriousness in it as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I certainly hope sometime in the future a trip to something like this planet is in the cards for me. I hope we can all take that trip.
So on that topic, so I've been kind of looking through this book again, and I going back to the very very beginning. This is a nice segue, Jim. I like what you did there. There is a bit where they actually talk about, you know, going back to the holodeck situation, you know, is this sort of the precursor to the holodeck? I found in one of these, I have to look it up again. Give me one moment, guys. I'm sorry. What is the philosopher's name? Robert Nozick says, consider an experience machine to which a person could be hooked up for an extended period of time or perhaps their entire life. During their time in the machine, they'd experience nothing but pleasurable experiences that had been pre-programmed, all the while being unaware that their experiences are artificially generated. The problem with the idyllic enticement of this experience machine isn't that it's ideal, but rather that it's idle, presenting us with a mode of life that has lost its purpose. So, you know, the idea of, you know, the holodeck is a constructed machine and this planet is real life. Something to think about.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that has been a common scientific sci-fi trope in many movies. I mean, how many people who've been in movies have been addicted to virtual reality, and how many movies and shows have shown us the dangers of VR. And I can certainly, I mean, we've all had our experiences with VR at work and in our everyday lives as part of our play maybe, but who hasn't been, you know, lured into a better world where you can be something better, but it's just not reality, folks, just not reality. You know what? Speaking of reality, that's it for this episode, guys. Okay, that's all we have for tonight for Shore Leave. I want to thank everybody for watching. You guys were fantastic for your insight, expert analysis, as always. Please stay tuned for our next episode. It's to be announced, not set yet. But we are going to have just a killer. I know I say this all the time. We're going to review City on the Edge of Forever. All right. How cool will that be? Hopefully you guys are going to join us. So until then, guys, live long and prosper. We'll see you next time.